Welcome to the Business Buyer Diaries. My name is Nathan Platter. I'm a full-time employee, and I bought a business. I did everything right, from finding the deal, handling all the due diligence on 63 opportunities, and ultimately bought a profitable gym. And boy, was I in for a big surprise as a new owner. I chronicled everything in real time, including the biggest wins to the stressful nights at 2 a.m. I'm sharing my journey without sugarcoating anything, so you don't make the same mistakes that I did. Here's today's episode.
All right, so two parts today. One is going to be the updates on the business process. Next, the links to reconnaissance I did on the studio that we're buying. So got the checklist from the bank. I got the big checklist and have been knocking those out over the weekend. A lot of it is like wet signature signing, the proof of funds statement. And for those who don't know, wet signature means like you physically sign the piece of paper. You don't just like DocuSign or DigiSign, but you actually put a pen to a piece of paper. And then ideally, I think you have to mail that signed piece of paper back to the lender. So that's called a wet signature because ink is wet. Sometimes they let you scan it back. So for those things, I always use like a blue pen or a red pen, but not black. If it's black, then people can guess if it's a fax or a photocopy. And if it's bright blue, then they know they got a colored version of the document. So just kind of a pro tip. I've worked with a lot of stacks of papers in a former job. It was a terrible job. I hated it. But whenever people had blue or red pens, I loved it because I knew it was a color copy and it was a real wet signature. Plus, you can see the ink fading and like the density of the ink. Like with Sharpie, it's all uniform. If you like really zoom in on the signature, you can tell like where people pressed hard or lightened up. So it looks like a real signature, not a digital version. So that's it. I think I've got like two or three things to go out of the 10-item checklist. The landlord. So the landlord is a grocery company here in the Twin Cities. It's basically a strip mall, and the grocery store is the anchor tenant. There's probably, I don't know, seven or so tenants on the strip mall next to it. And so the grocery store doesn't actually do the real estate, but they have real estate agents through like a commercial brokerage agency that runs it. So they found out that the transfer is happening, they decided to see them go, and then I'm now the next person to get that signed off. So they're very on board. They're totally up for it. So no more objections from what I can see for going ahead and completing the transaction. Funds that one. I need to have the franchisor sign off and send a copy that they agree with me being a franchisee. So that's in the works. What else? The big event starts in 2 days. So the annual franchise conference is in 2 days. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Nothing too crazy that I can tell. It sounds like about 100 people will be there in total. So it'll be a good sized crowd. And I'll just be going in as someone who's looking to launch my own studio in the Twin Cities. But that's as detailed as I'm going to get. I'm not going to say I'm acquiring a unit. I'm not going to say that I have a place in mind. But I'm under contract to start a location here in the Twin Cities. And everything else will be revealed after it's closed. So kind of excited, a little bit nervous, but had a chance to meet a few people that way too. That's it for the business front. Nothing really beyond that. But one thing that was kind of fun, over the weekend, there was an event called the Rugged Maniac. It's kind of like a tough mudder race. So a lot of people will show up, do an obstacle course, get a workout. It's a lot of great sweaty fun, really dirty, a lot of muddy. And one thing that's kind of neat is this franchise, out of their like, I don't know how many locations, probably like a dozen locations in the Twin Cities. They all had members that attended showed up. And everyone, a lot of folks at least, bought a t-shirt that was a very different color. So everyone who attended would wear like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, black, or gray, most commonly black or gray shirts to this event. And then the folks that were in this franchise could buy like a $30 shirt that was like neon bright blue. It jumped out and no one else had that color. So in the crowd, you could see all the members that were part of this club or this franchise system that were members and attending. I really liked that. And along the way, I had a chance to just bump elbows and be like, oh, hey, I'm over at this location in this part of the Twin Cities. And getting a chance to hear like, oh, they're in a different part, different club. And lo, I kid you not, this is like fate. It was really great. Was meeting someone along the way and he's like, oh, I think I've seen you at the location. And we've seen each other. So we met and he said, hey, my name is Lance. So hey, Lance, my name is Nathan. I'm at I guess by now that everyone will know, but I'm at the Eden Prairie location. And so we're like, oh, no way. It's small world. I actually started that location. So I'm like, there's no way. This is unreal. And so we started talking about the genesis of this location, which was back in 2016. So right now it's 2023. So the club's about 7 years old. And just a little bit of context of why this is so valuable. If you look up your own genealogy, your family history, a lot of times your knowledge goes back to probably your grandparents or maybe your great-grandparents. Now, were you immigrants? Did you move across the country? Do you have any family history from like the Mayflower? Were you brought over as slaves? Like, how did you get to the United States or your respective country? And it doesn't go back that far. We're not really, as a people group, we're not really that great at family history. With the business world, it gets even worse. Most people only know what the prior owner did in terms of like financial numbers or maybe what the prior owner did. But a typical person owns a franchise business about 5, maybe 7 years across all industries. And with health clubs, it's a little bit shorter. It's not even that good. So out of a typical historical time period, you maybe have like 4 or 5 years of business history. You know, if you're lucky, 7. And in my case, like, I only know what the owner did and what the prior person did. I only go back like 4 years. And so when the bank is asking, you know, what's the origin story of this business? And I know it's 7 years old, but I only know 4 years of history. And so right in here on the start, I have access to the guy that started the location. And so his name is Lance. Lance sold it to Dale. Dale sold it to a guy named Casey, and Casey sold it to a guy named me, Nathan. And so I had a chance to hear about the whole difference over time and how the club has changed. Why is it doing so well nowadays? You know, what did Lance do that he was really liking? What things did he start that were going really well and not going well? And keeping Lance's background a little veiled for his own privacy, he had a day job when he started the club, and so he would work from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m., work his day job from like 8:30 to 4:30, and then work at the club again from, you know, 4:30 to 8 o'clock at night. So understandably so, like, you're working like a crazy person when you do that much stuff. And so just hearing what things does he do that worked really well, what things did not work well. One kind of cool thing he did, you know, it's a studio, so not as much space. He popped up a kid playroom. So the room in there, they have a lot of books, a lot of toys. He would do like superhero day every couple months where you come in, show up, work out, and dress up as your favorite superhero, and your kids could dress up like a superhero. Like, that's awesome. That's actually really cool. And just little goofy things like that, people loved. And let's look at it from purely a business perspective, taking everything else out except the business fundamentals, there's 3 ways you can improve revenue. And I got this from Alex Formosi, someone I'm going to meet pretty soon here. Just putting that out there, Alex. You can either get more customers, get more revenue per customer, or lose your members less frequently or more rarely, or word another way, your members stay longer. If you're trying to improve your top line revenue, those are the only 3 things you can do, only 3 options. And so when it comes to whatever you hear about, like this new product, this new thing we can do to the club, this new funnel strategy, this whatever, and it's going to cost more than $5. My first thought is, well, is it going to do any of those 3 things or a combination of those 3 things? And with stuff like goofy as superhero day or like a new weight loss plan for new members that sign up, or we do a follow-up campaign for members that are not showing up as much, it's got to do one of those 3 things. With superhero day, people stayed longer. A few more people signed up, but people stayed longer. And that was really cool to see. And then hearing about, like, well, you know, why'd you sell? Well, his life was just way too busy. And then he said, the current guy, Casey's done a great job. The club's now thriving and bounced along. So, okay, well, like, you know, what's some stuff that Dale did, you know, along the way? You know, Dale didn't keep it for 20 years. You know, why'd Dale buy it? You know, why'd Dale sell it? You know, it's, you don't ask it objectively, or you just ask it like out of curiosity. Because, I mean, I'm stepping into this big tangled mess, right? And he said, well, Dale didn't really want to do as much superhero day. You know, the kids' room wasn't as much of a thing. And it just lost some of that juice from what I could assess from his assessment. And so just realizing this place seems to be fun, family-friendly, interactive. You know, it was a fine club, but the next owner, Dale, was also, and given the COVID scenario, and that's a tall order. Whatever you're good at doing, you got to double up at during COVID. And there's just too much for Dale, I guess. I don't know. I'll have to meet Dale to figure that out one out. But then hearing what the current guy's doing, Casey, hearing that he's bringing back the kids' room. I don't know if he's doing superhero day, but why not? If it's working, let's do it. And just all the little things that you don't really know. And so just coming in as a curious new member, joining the community, being welcomed along, chit-chatting. And at the end of the day, you know, we're all changed. We're all out of our many clothes, getting invited to go grab a beer with everyone at the restaurant down the street with all the other members. Like, this is an inviting community. It's energetic. People are self-fueling the system itself. And it's an active and engaged group. And I know everyone says they have the most engaged group, the best culture, the best instructors, the best workout programs. And only half of everyone is above average, which is a sad statistic, but half of everyone is below average too. And so if you're going to be above average in something, you have to be able to quantify it or validate it. And our members are inviting and hanging out with each other outside of the club. They're hanging out at social hours. They're doing fun workout events together. They're organically bringing in referrals and competing for having fun. Like, this is a positive thing. So just doing reconnaissance, meeting people along the way, but it's been really been cool. And so I know I'm biased to validate my decisions, because the more into the deal I get, the more I want it to be true. I want it to be real. So I'm going to be more biased to complete the deal. But really, at the end of the day, I haven't seen anything to disprove that this is a bad deal. Or to prove this is a bad deal, disprove it, that I'm making a good decision. So, really exciting. Definitely, I 10 out of 10 recommend be a customer of your business first. I think right now we're almost, I think I'm almost 3 months in to being a member of the business. That's really, really good. Glad I've done it. About $400 so far. Not buying some merch. So, probably $500 of sales so far. Highly recommend it. There's no way I would buy a business without buying from the business itself first. Yeah. One way or the other, I can't imagine any issue that's a good idea to not buy from your business. It's part of your due diligence. And that's something I can't imagine doing without doing. Unless I was buying something from afar, I probably would hire secret shoppers and give them $500, spend $500, and get their feedback on it. So that's the state of the business transaction, a little bit of more legwork on my side. Business licenses, proof of funds, and then now just getting some reconnaissance on the membership base. And I'm realizing more and more, when you buy a business without a whole lot of assets or inventory, you're buying what's called goodwill, is the accounting or the business term. And that's the intangibles. It's the promise this is a good thing without any hard things to validate it. And the more and more I see it, the more I see this stellar team, an amazing membership base, an awesome management group, and I don't want to change a single thing about it. So let's stay the state. We're going to go have some fun, go pick some pumpkins and apples, and highly recommend anyone shop from your business before you go onward. Cheers.
This has been another episode of the Business Buyer Diaries. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. I hope you're realizing that business ownership is no cakewalk. Check the podcast notes for a link to the DIY due diligence program, the complete list of show sponsors, and for media inquiries. Music written and composed by Wes Schrock. I'm your host, Nathan Platter. Join me again on the next one.